This episode of the Gegenpressing Podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for the NBA and NHL playoffs this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to Online Casino and get in on our game Blackjack or Poker, or unwind with one of our over 150 slot games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Don't forget to use the promo code BELIEVE, that is B-L-E-A-V, BELIEVE, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here.
Welcome to the Gegenpressing Podcast, the penultimate Gegenpressing Podcast of the season, I think. These things can always change, scheduling can always be moved last minute, but as things stand, the final before the final, and we have plenty to talk about. My name is Stefan Binkowski, and today I'm hosting this show because my guests are my colleagues, Manu Vett, who's always with me, and of course Dan Whiten from the AFP. I'm more than lucky to be joined by them because they were both in attendance at this weekend's DFB Pokal, where Leverkusen beat Kaiserslautern, and there's so much to talk about with that game. But guys, let's just deal with what we have to deal with today tonight, and that is an absolute bonkers relegation slash playoff game, as the DFL seem to call it, according to their advertising boards, relegation 2024, which I feel like doesn't kind of catch the kind of hopefulness of, you know, the team getting promoted. But anyway, it was a game, or a tie rather, that Dusseldorf won 3-0 quite convincingly in Bochum. And then the return tie was, of course, at Dusseldorf tonight, where Bochum basically returned the favour and then went on to win on penalties. Dan, you're our guest. I'll let you jump in first. One absolute bonkers game of football, and maybe a good kind of curtain conclusion to a bonkers season in German football.
Yeah, I don't know if a curtain shutter is a thing, but yeah, it was definitely not at all what I expected. The Dusseldorf was so much better in the first game. They hadn't lost a match in the league since February, and it just seemed to be a procession. I don't know if you saw the pre-match tifo, but Dusseldorf had a pretty great one, but all it said was Dusseldorf wins in big letters, and so they were clearly confident. But it was one of those, you know, there's a lot of criticism of the relegation playoff that it advantages the top division team too much. And watching that, it seemed like two different classes of teams. Watching that tonight when Bochum won comfortably, which isn't what we saw last week. I mean, what we saw last week was a different story. It looked like Dusseldorf were clearly the better team, the team with much more momentum, the team that everything just seemed to work. Whereas tonight, even though they were in front of their home fan tonight, it just nothing seemed to click for them.
Yeah, it was a crazy game. I feel like goalkeeper Andreas Luther kind of summed it up, actually, where the Bochum goalkeeper, where, you know, he makes a catalogue of mistakes in the first leg, and then he just kind of becomes this kind of shield in front of the goal mouth in the second half. And man, it felt to me like a game in which it almost like Bochum were able to really dig deep and rely on, I don't know if you want to call it, you know, Bundesliga experience or a kind of ingrained sense of not entitlement, but the sense that, like, hey, look, we're the Bundesliga team, we need to kind of get our head in the game and win this match. And, you know, that first goal goes in so easily. Hoffman looked like he was playing, it looked like a guy, and, you know, we go on holiday and it's like, and it's the dad in the swimming pool with his kids, and he's playing like basketball in the swimming pool, and he's just like two or three feet higher than his kids, and they're all just like crawling all over him, and he can't get anywhere near them. That was how I felt Hoffman played tonight, because Dusseldorf couldn't get near him. But it just felt like Dusseldorf just got stage fright or something, and it just all completely caved in.
Yeah, sometimes you're scared to win, right? To make that final step and take that, you know, grasp victory that's right in front of you. And Dusseldorf kind of felt like that to me today. I thought it was really fascinating that Hoffman was the guy who played this incredible game. Remember, he was the one who opened the scoring for Fortuna Dusseldorf last weekend, right? Last week, after the Chilios corner kick that hit the post and then went off Hoffman and in. I think that opening goal gave Bochum that momentum that they needed and that little bit of hope. And, you know, they spoke about having all that hope over the weekend that this game wasn't over. Kevin Stöger proclaimed that, right? And Schlotterbeck said something too. And I mean, there's a saying in German that goes something like this. It's a hope is the little sister of despair. So it felt for me like, oh yeah, this is just empty phrases that they're shouting into the air. And really, I don't think anyone thought that Bochum was going to come back from this. But, you know, as good as Bochum were, I really sensed that Düsseldorf were really scared today. And I watched the first half on Sky sister station, which is called Wow in Germany. And they had Klaus Allofs on at halftime. And in that conversation with the reporter, I had the sense that he looked really worried. And he said, no, look, they were up. Bochum was only up 1-0 at that point, right? And Klaus Allofs, the sporting director, was saying to the Sky journalist, hey, look, this is a Bundesliga team. This is far from over. We never thought it would be over after the 3 goals we scored. He looked really, really, really worried. And maybe that should have given us some indication of what was going to happen in the second half. Having said all that, I don't know how you guys feel about this, but there was a good 3 to 4 minutes at the very end of extra time where it looked like Fortuna was going to score that one goal.
Yeah, I did think that when it went to extra time. I thought Fortuna was surely getting an opportunity here because, you know, full-time couldn't have came a better chance for them where, you know, Bochum looked like they could have went on to score 4 or 5 goals. They were just in this kind of run. Full-time comes, everyone manages to catch a breather. And then I kind of thought, right, the game's reset. They've taken the wind out of Bochum's sails. And as you said, Fortuna could have almost kind of finished it off at the end of the game. But yeah, I don't know. I just keep going back to, like, I know it's not a very analytical or something that you can kind of quantify, but obviously I was just watching it on my TV, but the way that both teams were behaving on and off the pitch, I felt was just so different. Like the Fortuna head coach, is it Tjon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Daniel Tjon.
Yeah, Tjon. Even just watching him, like at full time and before the penalties, obviously the camera was cutting between the kind of Düsseldorf huddle and the Bochum huddle, and Tjon's just kind of standing there smirking. He's not really saying much. He just looked really, really nervous. And then you cut to the Bochum huddle, and they're basically like fist pumping. They're like bouncing off each other's chests. You know, they're really kind of quite aggressive. Like, yeah, we've got this. You know, we know what we're doing. We're in the ascendancy. We just need to finish this off. And I don't know that. I mean, I guess it's just the way the sport works, that it's all about momentum. But it just felt to me like Bochum were always going to win that penalty shootout.
Yeah, that stood out to me too. It was like you looked at Bochum and it was like, I don't know, the Mighty Ducks or something. You know, it was like chest bumps and just players like screaming and yelling. Players who hadn't been off the bench yet were like giving passionate kind of Pacino-like speeches. And then they cut to Fortuna and Tuane, again, if I'm saying it right, he seemed very cool and calm. And, you know, this is, again, the type of thing that if they triumph on penalties, you say, ah, well, his cool and calm nature was what we needed. So, you know, you can always, with hindsight, look at it in a different way. But it did really seem like, energy-wise, like Bochum were really fired up. The other aspect of that, which is funny, is that they were in Düsseldorf. They were in like a 50,000-seat stadium in Düsseldorf with Düsseldorf's fans. I mean, they were really, you know, there's a lot of Düsseldorf fans. They're you know, historical club. And so it seemed strange that the performance of Bochum, not just in the penalty shootout, but the whole game, was seemingly like the home team.
I had one thought about that, because I kind of sense, and I watched the first leg and I was really impressed how Fortuna played that game. And there were moments towards the end of that game where Fortuna could have made it 4 and 5-0. And you know what? I guess, you know, as Dan just said, hindsight is 2020, blah, blah, blah. But you almost do think that if Fortuna had scored maybe just one more in Bochum, there would have just been no way. 3-0 still seems kind of manageable though, right? Like, especially when that first one goes in, then it's all of a sudden only two and you still have, what?
Sure, yeah.
True. 70 minutes, right?
It almost felt like a kind of bigger version of the old, you know, 2-0 is the worst, is a scoreline. I can't even remember the expression. It's a dangerous scoreline to rely on.
Worst lead in history is 2-0.
Yeah, and it is almost like Dusseldorf kind of walked onto the pitch tonight thinking, well, our job's done here. Two things I want to mention here before we move on, because we do need to get onto the Pokal. Number one is just the absolute star quality of Kevin Stöger, who more or less dragged Bochum to the final tonight. Two assists and a cross that led to the penalty for the third goal. He's been immense for Bochum this season. They would have been probably beneath Darmstadt if not for his goals and assists, which I've just checked there when you were talking, Manu. He scored and assisted 38% of their league goals this season, which is just absolutely bonkers. And tonight's game was a perfect example, or perfect microcosm of, you know, Bochum this season, in the sense that everything they do well is through him. And of course, just the second thing, and we talked about this last season, so it's not like I'm, you know, picking a hole in, I'm not trying to kind of rain on Bochum's parade here, but, you know, when Dusseldorf missed that penalty and the player goes down crying, and it kind of cuts to all their players and the manager, and you think, this is the cruelty of this playoff system, that Dusseldorf can have such an outstanding season and it still comes down to this, and they're left with just absolutely nothing to show for it. I mean, of course, you know, they'll calm down, they'll wake up tomorrow, they'll go for a walk, get some fresh air and be like, no, do you know what, we did ourselves proud, blah, blah, blah. But it's just crazy that you can play so well over the course of the season, you know, be the third best team in this 5 Bundesliga and it's still not good enough because Bochum show up for 90 minutes. And, you know, it's just a minor little thing because I say it every season, but I just don't like the idea that the team who finished third bottom in the Bundesliga get this kind of get-out-of-jail-free card to have one last shot at avoiding relegation. I know playoffs are exciting, but I'd much rather see it between, like, you know, third, fourth and fifth play each other to get to that third spot or something. And it means one of those teams ultimately did deserve it, rather than what is more often the case than not, the Bundesliga team just kind of, you know, putting in one kind of heroic cup final performance and being able to compensate for what has been a dreadful season.
You know, I think you make a really, really good point. I think the real issue here is that the Bundesliga is the smallest of the top five leagues, right? So by percentage, if three would go down, because it's three in the Premier League, right? It's three in Italy. Is it three in Italy? If one of you guys want to correct me here, go jump right in, but I'm pretty sure it is. And it's three in Ligue 1, it's three in Spain. And so if they would go back to three, that would be quite a large percentage of teams having a guaranteed down, right? Which is ultimately why they decided to go back to the system which they had in the 80s as well, and then abandoned briefly in the 90s and early 2000s, and then brought back. On the other hand, I fully agree with you. When you play 34 games the way Fortuna have played it, and it was tight in the second division, wasn't it? You do deserve a little bit more than just this chance of a playoff game. But, you know, something has to be decided somehow. And the drama for us neutrals, I support a club that has played three relegation playoffs in recent years. So I feel sorry for everyone who has to go through it, winner or loser. But for us neutrals, it's just so entertaining. It's just, you know, these last 180 minutes were incredible. So, you know, if you can maybe get somehow a system in that can be fair on both ends and still entertain us, sure. But it's, you know, maybe you have to go to the Bundesliga to 20 teams and make the fourth team, and I guess in this case it would be 16th, play a relegation playoff, and then it would be fairer. But yeah, I think the relegation playoffs in one form or another need to stay. I don't know how you feel about it, Dan, but I think it's great cinema.
It's different. I mean, it's cruel, but sometimes that's what makes great cinema. So yeah, it's really exciting, and I guess that because the odds are against the second division team, when they do something, it is more. I mean, coming into this game, it really looked like Dusseldorf had done something incredible to get 3-0 up. And you know, this was an example of a team that was in good form, that was confident, that things were working, that had lost one game since February, and that was against Leverkusen, which, you know, you can excuse them that. It'd be a good topic for another podcast, how we would change or not change the relegation playoff system. But it, again, at the same time, you know, losing 3-0 on your own turf, when all you've got to do is to lose by like two or less, to go through, it isn't good enough. So yeah, that's clearly what happened. That performance from Stöger. I don't know if he's out of contract in summer. I mean, you guys transfer-marked people, so maybe you know where he's going. There's a lot of talk that he would go to Union. I think that's a lot of my Union friends have been saying that. He's kind of the ideal Union signing, you know. He really just, I mean, really dragged them across the line. There was once even late in the game where I saw him running through the box to head out a corner. I think it was before extra time, but even in defense, you know, he just had this will to get the team across the line. So that was what was decisive in the end.
You know who Kevin Stöger's agent is?
I don't know.
He represents one person that's registered on Transfermarkt. It's Kevin Stöger.
Is it right? What a coincidence.
It's Kevin Stöger, yeah. Kevin Stöger's agent, is that what you're saying?
I just checked it.
Yeah.
So I was already getting ready and trying to find the number so we could find out, but this is going to be a bit more tricky.
Well, his contract is up at the end of the season, so I think that's where a lot of speculation is coming from. And we'll obviously have to wait and see what happens, because Bochum staying in the Bundesliga might change things now. But I kind of want to move, guys, to the Pokal. I think we've given the relegation playoff its dues, and obviously congratulations to Bochum and commiserations to Dusseldorf. They'll always be next season, I suppose. But I do want to talk about the Pokal, because you guys were both there. It was an incredible atmosphere, incredible event. Maybe we should just do this chronologically and start with the pre-match stuff, where we had some incredible tifos, Manu, and all the kind of colour, noise and atmosphere that you would hope for a German Cup final.
Well, if you haven't known about Kaiserslautern up to this point, first of all, shame on you. You haven't read all the substacks that I've written all season long on them, and my several Forbes articles. So shame on you. But, you know, if you haven't known about the club and what they stand for up until the final, I'm sure you do now, because the tifo that they produced is the best I've ever seen at a German Cup final. It was incredible. I think the stuff that came out afterwards, that you know, the fans put 100,000 euros together to build this choreography or tifo themselves. Also the way they behaved themselves around the city of Berlin. You know, there were so many of them. They were clearly the more dominant of the two fan groups, and you know, really completely underlining the status that this club still has in German football and German history. You know, we spoke about it in the previous show, that this is a club with a lot of history, and I think all of that was underlined. And Leverkusen had a tifo too. It was okay.
Giant aspirin. I like sometimes that, you know, Leverkusen, obviously they, you know, criticize for the ownership and stuff, but sometimes they're pretty self-aware, you know, so it was just a big giant pill. I like that as well. But yeah, sorry to interrupt, man.
Not at all. I was going to come to you next anyway, because obviously I know you probably would struggle to take a lot in, since you were probably sitting next to Manu and couldn't hear anything, but what did you think of the atmosphere? Obviously, we talked so much in the pre-match, Manu and I on the shows leading up to, about, you know, how wonderful it is that, you know, we've got two teams, well, one team in particular, who obviously don't reach German Cup finals all the time. I know Leverkusen did it a wee while ago, but it's kind of been the usual kind of Dortmund, Bayern, Leipzig, Freiburg slog for a while now. And it was just great to have not only Kaiserslautern there, but they were the way that they represented themselves was just it's a nice way to start a game of football, isn't it?
Yeah, that was a great. It's just one of those great Pokal seasons, you know, like the three of the four semi-finalists for second division teams. Oh, sorry, one was third division, two were second division, and then Leverkusen. And I think first Pokal final since 2012, not to feature Leipzig, Dortmund, or Bayern. And so you knew that you were going to get an unusual winner no matter who won. And the actual to be there, I mean, it's become a trend now. The last 2 years I've sat next to Manu, and last year, I mean, the Frankfurt fans are always incredible. They did a great job, but, you know, it felt like a home game for them this year. Definitely Kaiserslautern was the same thing. But that giant devil, it just kept getting bigger and bigger, and I just couldn't quite believe it. Just like taking pictures, and then it seemed to have like a cauldron what was boiling with all the flares. And then at halftime, the sky turned kind of orangey red, and there was huge clouds coming in, and it really felt like we'd summoned something. I was concerned about what have we done to summon the devil.
Don't forget the bats.
There was just all these bats there. And it just really felt like end of days. Like that was the whole experience was, you know, really, really something special.
They've been meaning to renovate the Olympia Stadion for a while now. If there's bats hanging around there, you know, there's a problem.
Well, in fairness, they have. The roof is new. It can produce this light show now, which actually looks really cool. But yeah, somehow the bats moved back in after the renovation was done, I guess.
Yeah, I guess they didn't get rid of the bats yet. But anyway, it all added to it. And so it became this thing of like, well, you know, what you don't want, unless you're a Leverkusen fan, I guess, is a procession. You know, you want like a match with a bit of jeopardy, and that's exactly what it was. And I think from that moment of the, you know, who knows what the Leverkusen players know about Kaiserslautern, but the moment that devil is unleashed, and then after that you had you know, constant flares, constant fireworks. You had warnings around the clock from the stadium announcer saying, hey, listen, think about how much the team's going to pay in fines before you know, and then obviously they didn't mind that at all. They spent 100,000 euros reportedly on that devil, so they weren't too concerned about the cost. But it just set the stage for a pretty, pretty incredible game. And I think, Xhaka's goal went in after 16 minutes, he had the impression that, okay, it could be a 4-0 kind of romp, but the red card changed that, and it was, you know, tense right until the end.
Yeah, well, as you kind of said, it was a romp, it wasn't a session, it wasn't a parade for Leverkusen. Kaiserslautern put up a fight, which is more than you can say for half the Bundesliga this season when it comes to trying to beat Leverkusen. And you know, we can talk about the second yellow card for Kosunu or the incredible finish from Granit Xhaka for that goal and his celebration to once again pull out the old... For anyone who missed it, he did the old, I've pulled my hammy celebration, which I think, at least this time, Xabi Alonso didn't fall for it, thankfully. But it felt like two moments in this game that really stood out to me were actually Xabi Alonso's reaction to things. First, when that goal went in, he just hit the roof, and you know, he's not typically the kind of manager that goes nuts when the goals go in. He's not like a Jurgen Klopp who you'll see running the length of the sideline or anything, but it almost felt like the pressure just being lifted off him when Xhaka kind of fired that one in. And then equally, when Kosunu went off, and I think you mentioned this in your match report on the Substack, Manu, that the cameras all kind of cut to Xabi Alonso, and he's sitting on the sideline, head in his hands, and I just feel like the weight of expectation on Leverkusen was one thing to win this game, but the almost like the fear that what happened in Dublin could repeat itself, I feel like that was hanging over this game so heavily, and it obviously just kind of got heavier and heavier as the game went on, and Leverkusen were a man down, and Kaiserslautern started asking real questions. It wasn't even that late on, obviously. They basically started doing it before the half time. But yeah, it was. So I guess in the sense, what I'm trying to say here is, it was another final. It didn't really go to plan for Leverkusen.
Yeah, and you know what? It wasn't even just the fact that they kept it tight. The first 5-8 minutes or so, Dan, Kaiserslautern really took it to them as well, right? There was that shot that Radetzky had to stop. I actually felt that Kaiserslautern earned Kosunu's first yellow card, because they really pressed them high, and they really tried to really take the game to them and try to, you know, maybe get that little bit of insecurity going in this Leverkusen side, similar to what Atalanta have done. Mind you, this Kaiserslautern side doesn't just have the same talent or level than a top Serie A side, right? But you could clearly tell that that was sort of the game plan, and it could have worked. That I actually really felt that they earned Kosunu's sending off through tactical means, and that also helped them keep the game tight. I think ultimately they just the problem for them, and Friedhelm Funkel kind of alluded to that in his post match press conference, is that they weren't able to extend too much, because I mean Adli came on in the second half, right? Josef Stadišić came on for Jonas Hofmann, and Funkel's fear was that if they extended too high, then Leverkusen was going to get into these counter-pressing situations where they could really quickly switch over and hit Kaiserslautern on the counter. And that is maybe why Kaiserslautern was ultimately not able to tie this. But there were moments there where they really tried. And, I agree with you, like that moment on TV. Thankfully, I was sitting next to a far more experienced reporter than myself, who brought a second laptop with a TV screen on it. So we were actually able to see it. Dan, there was another moment I really liked in the second half. And you pointed this out. You saw it live on the field, and then we saw it again in replays. Kaiserslautern lost the ball. Wirtz was going to go to a throw-in, and Alonso just grabs him and puts him in a big bear hug to just slow everything down. And I think that really exemplified a few things too, that Leverkusen at 1-0, they were quite happy to just see the game out there.
Yeah, that was a moment that, I mean, it's become like a viral thing now. I've seen it, clips and sent around and stuff, but I hadn't seen something like that before, where it looked like Leverkusen had a really good chance on the counter, and then Alonso just wanted to stop him somehow, and so he gave him a hug, like your mate at the barbecue has had too many beers, and he's trying to go back and change the music again, and you find out, how am I going to get him off the Spotify, and so you just give him a big hug. Okay, maybe that's a bit, maybe that happened to me recently, but it was just one of those moments of like, it also shows you his kind of emotional intelligence with the players and the relationship he has with the players, and Florian Wirtz is clearly a really talented player and a very competitive player, but he just knew the right thing to do at that time. And yeah, back to what you were saying before, Stefan, that like it, if you could, there's been so many times when Alonso has made the right call this season in each of the three competitions. But this was a moment that really challenged him. And you could see when the cameras cut to him after that red card that he was thinking, okay, this is, what am I going to do here? I don't have a simple solution for this. And also knowing that, this is the whole Leverkusen thing. This is the whole history of the team. Winning the league, incredible, it'll never be forgotten. But if they manage to go from within a week from an unbeaten treble to just the one trophy, that would really change the whole narrative of the season. That'd change the whole narrative of the club's successes. So you could really feel that weighing on him. And then he made, two changes at halftime, and it really did change the way they were playing. They were sitting back, they were attacking on the counter, they had some really good chances on the counter. but they weren't dominating possession like they normally do. And so, yeah, I mean, he came through. He passed that test. So, and that was impressive as well. You know, for anyone who, you know, I've seen criticism of the Leverkusen because they've had, I think there was 5 times this year in the league where the opposition got a red card, and people suggesting, well, you know, they had a bit of luck. But I think the way they play, often teams are out on their feet and they commit fouls and then they give away, you know, they get yellow cards, they get red cards as a result of the way they play. But yeah, I think it showed a level of his tactical understanding and how he responded to a challenge.
Yeah, it's interesting because we've more or less got 2 finals here where in both of them, Leverkusen's plan A basically goes out the window. You know, against Atalanta, they were obviously played off the pitch by a really well-drilled team. I guess you could argue that plan A went out the window when the injuries and the fitness issues started to stack up, and you know, maybe Leverkusen were forced to pay Adli up front, for example, and you know, all sorts of kind of different personnel changes. And then obviously in this final, Kostanu gets sent off in the first half, and all of a sudden Leverkusen can't play the way they've been playing for the entire season, which is man for man, and just knowing that as long as they have 11 players on the pitch and you have 11 players on the pitch, your 11 players can pass around those opponents and eventually win the game. And I think that maybe kind of did a good job of maybe forming a lot of the feedback and reaction after the game, Manu, from what I could tell. But obviously you and Dan were there speaking to the players, the coaches and stuff. And from what I can tell, a lot of it was kind of focused on next season. And rather than kind of patting themselves on the back for what they've done, it was very much, you know, maybe a case of saying, you know, or maybe Alonso specifically saying, you know, these 2 games show that I don't have the squad that maybe I need to kind of comprehend and to react to all these challenges.
Yeah, I mean, that's, he said it twice, right? He was asked this in German and in English. And I'm paraphrasing here, but, you know, he said we have to relax and party, and then Simon and I have to sit down, that Simon Rolf is the director of sport, and him have to sit down and analyze the situation, and that he wants to continue on this path, and I hope that he and the club will make the right decisions to go forward and be successful. Again, this is paraphrased. You know, the actual quotes are in a couple of articles that I wrote on this. And I thought that was really interesting. And then Simon Rolf has said, I think it was post game as well, that, you know, they want to bring in some fresh blood, re-energize the squad. Now, and you mentioned this, I think, last week, Stefan, that, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson always had the whole philosophy of breaking apart a team that has won everything, you know, to bring in new blood and new to energize the squad again. And, you know, I was always under the impression until maybe like a week ago that Leverkusen were going to just, you know, roll it back, come back with pretty much the same squad, you know, maybe lose Jeremy Frimpong and that's it. Now I'm not so sure that's actually true anymore. I think that by design, that the turnover might actually be bigger than we think. And it's not because other teams are going to poach the best players. I think it's going to be because they know that they might have to adapt the way that they're playing. I mean, they were so reliant on scoring these late goals. I did a piece for Transfermarkt today where I broke down the statistics, right, where they were first in the league scoring goals after the 76th minute, and they were first in the league scoring 8 goals after the 90th minute. And that, it, you know, other teams around them, they were in that category, you know, they were right with the team, 90 plus behind them was Dortmund. For the 76th, the 2 teams behind them were, you know, Bayern Munich and Stuttgart. So top teams tend to do this, but you need to make it sustainable over a season, right? And I think that is something that they're really looking at. And it's not shocking that, you know, 24 hours after they win the DFB Pokal, reports emerge out of Spain that they are very close in signing Alex Garcia from Girona, highly talented central midfielder. They're getting him because he's an exit clause that they can get him for 25 million euros. It's really, I mean, this is a really good player. He's going to be with Spain at the Euros, right? But they're getting these kind of players now too, because Javi Alonso is there, so they can now fish in a very different pond. And I think that too might make them say, maybe rather than, I still think they were only going to lose maybe two or three players max, and you know, one of them is going to be a top player and the rest is going to be players that they think are replaceable. But I think there's going to be quite a lot of top players coming in just to, you know, give them this little bit of a fresh blood cell cure to have that hunger next season to maybe win something in Europe as well.
When you think about, I was talking with a couple of people last week about, you know, where would you improve this team? And it's a tough one because they were unbeaten. So how do you improve a team that hasn't lost? And I mean, the main thing I thought was holding on to Stanisic if they could somehow, because he'd been so important for them and was important often. But it's, you know, obviously Xabi Alonso knows a lot more about football than I do. And it's clear that what he said afterwards, as I mentioned before, I was going to have a press conference, be part of a press conference today with Simon Rolfs and Fernando Caro, the kind of the brass that run Leverkusen. And what I wanted to discuss was Xabi Alonso's post-match comments, where he said, we have to make intelligent decisions. I hope we have to make good decisions for next year. He said it about a minute after saying, hey, I'm not thinking about next year. I want to party. I want to have a holiday. You know, I want to come on. Don't ask me about next year. How silly are you? You know, we've got to enjoy the moment. And then went on to mention very clearly that he, you know, very clearly that he's thinking about next year. I think the two things that came out to me about that was, first, he said it was clearly the words of someone who's planning on sticking around. You know, like if he's wants the team to get better, wants to build, that's a coach who isn't thinking, okay, I'm going to head off somewhere next year. I mean, this is a guy who's sticking to his promise to stay around and wants the team to get better, which I think would be good. But the other aspect of it, the second aspect, is that he's clearly saying, look, I hope I get backed by the club. I hope we don't sell off anyone important. I hope that we can spend more money, bring more players in, which was an interesting, as you said, Manu, he said it twice in two different languages, and so clearly wanted to emphasize it. And so my question was to Simon Rolfs today was, you know, what did he think of that? You know, is that, that's got to be on the one side something positive, that the hottest coach in football is clearly thinking of staying longer term, but the downside is he's already kind of short, throwing a bit of shade and saying, I hope these guys back me, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we talked about this a while ago, but, you know, and it has kind of been in the back of the minds when you watch Leverkusen over the last kind of couple of months, in the sense that they have relied on so many late goals and just kind of sheer luck or moments of utter brilliance from Florian Wirtz, or, you know, even miracle saves from Perdeksky. And I think Xabi Alonso's kind of experienced enough at the top level, in the sense that, you know, not only has he won titles with Bayern and Real Madrid, but he's also been in a team, he cut his teeth at a Liverpool team that were nowhere near league title contenders. You know, that Liverpool team were, in a sense, a bit like Leverkusen were before Alonso came along, where, you know, one of the maybe fifth or sixth best teams in the league, but by no means title contenders. I mean, obviously, I know they went on to win the Champions League, which is very different from what Leverkusen have achieved. But so I don't want to downplay what he did at Liverpool. But I guess the point I'm making is that he knows how fine the margins are between being one of the has-beens or one of the rest of the pack, and being one of the teams, and being the team actually that kind of storms to the league title. And I'm sure he's already probably analysing what's happened this season, and he'll know that, you know, if Leverkusen go into next season having to rely on, you know, eight goals in the 90th minute, it's a very risky thing. So you can completely understand why he's probably looking at the squad thinking, it got us to where it has to be, but that's because everyone played, you know, 110%, and it's just the nature of sport that you can't keep relying on these athletes to keep playing like that. You need to eventually raise the bar so that if everyone plays at 90%, it's still enough to go over the line. But yeah, I thought I'd just leave that there, like, what some. But yeah, Mario, we do have to kind of wrap this up. I'll let you kind of conclude and see where we go with this.
No, I you know, it's hard to add anything to that, because it's I think it's spot on, and Dan, I'm pretty sure that press conference that you were supposed to go to was called off because Simon is busy negotiating with Girona.
Yeah, it's a good reason.
But it was Monday. You know, we're now venturing into Tuesday by the time of this recording. But that tells you everything you need to know what Leverkusen are doing right now. You know, they are already in full on next season mode. And I guess one of the downsides to, well, it's hard to call it a downside. One of the aspects of being involved in the season so late means that you can't, that by this point of the year, most German teams have already made their key signings. Bayern Munich haven't because they don't have a coach. Dortmund are still in the Champions League, so they can't really make any decisions either. And Leverkusen can only start now because the season only concluded on Saturday, right? And so we're getting into this really weird time now between the Euros and next season where clubs will make decisions, and I guess Leverkusen are already fully in it. And they have just a tiny window now to be ahead of their main two competitors, Dortmund and Bayern, because of Bayern's ineptitude of making a coaching decision and Dortmund's involvement in the Champions League. And I think, although it's only 5 or 6 days, Simon Rolfes will use it. And we've seen last year that he is one of the best in the business, right? So I'm really curious to see what they're going to do.
Yeah, clearly, that was the foundation. And so it will be fascinating to see if they can pull some of the similar signings out of the hat this time around.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess that means that there's still plenty to keep your eyes on during the summer. The German football season has now came to a conclusion. The European one is not finished. One more game to go. Manu and I will both be there. I don't know.
Dan too.
Is Dan going
I'll
as well?
There
we go.
I'll be at Wembley.
That makes three.
And Sepp as well.
We'll all be there holding hands and singing the old Gegen Pressing theme song. Trademark and copyright permitting. But yes, so the final episode of the season, as things stand, will be our kind of immediate reactions from the Champions League final. But of course, you know, if you're not a subscriber, please do consider signing up because we'll be doing lots of previews and bonus shows this week. Nothing's really set in stone yet, Manu, for the summer, but we're thinking we'll probably continue doing some form of podcast for paid subscribers during the Euros. So if that's something you're interested in and you haven't signed up, please do consider it. But for now, we're now well past midnight where Dan and Manu are, so I should really let them go.
Just before we go, do we want to do a tip for the game on Saturday? Do we have, is that something that'd be, I'm curious to see what you guys think.
Oh, you saw that clanger. I haven't even thought about the Champions League final yet, if I'm being perfectly honest with you. I mean, I'd like to.
I'm going to stick my head out the window. I'm going to say 2-1 for Dortmund.
Right, okay. Yeah, okay. I had a weird thing that I thought it could be 2-0 for Dortmund, but that was a weird, strange burst of optimism that I'm really optimistic. So I think it'll probably be...
Listeners need to know that Dan is a Dortmund fan.
Yeah. Yeah, so listeners do need to know that.
Yes, and he's also very sleep-deprived.
And as a Dortmund fan, you know, you should not be tempted by the nastiness of optimism. So I think probably like green Real Madrid would be the real tip.
Okay, well. Well, there we go then. That's a good kind of a good optimistic note to end the episode on. But yeah, as always, guys, please do like and subscribe if you enjoy the show. We appreciate everyone who does support the show. Whether that's just listening to this podcast or subscribing to the Substack as well. And yeah, I think that's about that. And Mario, I'll let you finish things up with your old catchphrase.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be back soon. Until then, auf Wiedersehen.